About 2 months ago, I heard from Pastor Steve that he was going to be gone. And as we all know, when Steve is gone, that's when I'm here. And so he said, and I get to pick the sermon message because we just finished off our Hebrews series, which went for about 18 months. And we're not starting our next one until next week. So he said, pretty much the world's my oyster, and I get to pick whatever I wanted to preach on. I believe I had to keep it biblical, which that's a solid rule. But that was pretty much my guidance. And so I sat and I thought, you know, it's New Year's Eve. What do you talk about? Because a couple years ago, I preached on New Year's Eve Sunday, and I said we did resolutions, and it was a good time. But I was like, I've done that. I don't want to do that again. What else can you do? So I thought, hey, you know what? There's the prodigal son. What kind of message do you have with the prodigal son where you can say, hey, you know what? This last year was awful for you, and now you have a new year. You can come back to Jesus, and the prodigal son works so well. And so I said, this is it. This is my message. This is the prodigal son. We're going to talk about that. But then when I got into it, there is so much more in there than I ever imagined. And so it might take a little twist, but we're going to read this passage. There's a Bible on the rack in front of you for the most part, or in the nearby area, and we'll also have it on the screen as well. So we're going to read this together real quick as we start this morning. And I'm going to Sorry, I didn't want to start off. This is approximately 20 verses. I didn't want to start off with a dry mouth. So let's get going. All right. And he said, there was a man who had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the property that is coming to me. And he divided his property between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took a journey into a far country, and there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into the fields to feed the pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's servants have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. And he arose and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, bring quickly the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For my son was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found. And they began to celebrate. Now the older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing, and he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf, because he has received him back safe and sound. But he was angry and refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him, but he answered his father, look, these many years I have served you, and I have never disobeyed your command, yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fattened calf for him. And he said to him, son, you are always with me, and all that is mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad, for this is your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found. So let's just take a breath there for a moment, because there is an absolute ton of different messages to come out of this particular passage. There are so many things to think about. But I just wanted to start off and talk about kind of the context, because you have this parable, and it's the third parable. There's a series of parables in Luke 15, and this is the culminating parable. It starts off with the parable of the lost sheep, where you have the good shepherd, and he has his 100 sheep, and he loses one, and he goes off and he seeks and gets this sheep, and he goes out and leaves all the other ones and goes off into the wilderness and finds his sheep that he valued, and he wanted this sheep back. And so it's, you know, one out of 99 or one out of 100, and he goes for that one. Then you have and you have the parable of the lost coin, and it's about this woman that has the 10 coins, and they're part of her dowry and some things, and she loses one, which is an awful thing for her. And so she goes and searches her house, and pretty much tears apart her entire house and takes everything out. And for those of you that are going to be doing spring cleaning soon, you'll know what it looks like. Took everything out of all our cupboards, swept the floor, looked all over the place, and finally finds this lost coin. And they celebrate because she found this coin. And And now you get down to this one, and this is the final one. This is your lost son. And really, I would say that he found, it's the parable of the lost son, but really you could say the lost sons, because both of these sons were lost in their own way. And so he was, and the father is pursuing each of these sons, each in a unique way, but he wants both of them to be in a relationship with him. And so we're gonna talk about these two sons and kind of get into their personality and what their issues are and how those might relate to us today. We have the younger son, and he's the one that everyone always calls the prodigal son. When I was growing up, we had this, I saw this message and heard this message a number of times between kids' church and regular church and other times. And we had this, and we talked about the prodigal son and who he was, and he was always this guy that went off and did stupid things. I'll get up here so you guys can still see me. All right, and he did stupid things. He was the guy that wasted his money. He was reckless. It says he spent his money recklessly. I'm curious, how do you do that in ancient Israel? What's reckless for them? I mean, when I think of reckless usage of money, I'm like, is he a thrill seeker? What's the ancient Mideast version of skydiving? Was he jumping camels over a ditch or something? I don't know what they do. What is reckless? Maybe invested in some bad nightclub options. I don't know. The Bible's not very clear. But it does say they spent it recklessly. One thing that I do find a little bit interesting, I just want to touch on then get back, but the Bible, the word they use for reckless, Astos, I'm probably messing up the pronunciation, but it's A-S-T-O-S is the rough spelling. And it doesn't actually imply anything that would have to do with prostitutes. And somehow the older brother, when the younger son comes back, is like, oh, he wasted all your money spending with prostitutes. And it's like, how, he's in a far off country, he wasn't there, you haven't seen him, how are you deciding that this is prostitution-related recklessness? And so, we're going to put a pin in that and come back to that. But that, I just find that interesting. This reckless living is something. I don't know. We'll get into that a little bit more. But eventually, as all things happen, he was having a great old time, and he stopped having a great old time. Things got bad. Famines happen, and all of a sudden, he has no food. And so he goes and he works and he finds a job and he's working with pigs, which, as we all know, is a smelly occupation and unclean occupation for a Jewish person. And so that kind of just drives home the nail of this is something that he really didn't want to be doing and it wasn't going to work very well for him. And so then he sits there and he's like, you know what, this is bad. I could go be a slave in my dad's house and pretty much be the lowest of the low, but I could eat more there than I can here. And in the hierarchy of needs, food is pretty high. And so he decides to go back and he's just gonna do whatever he can to be provided for. He hasn't really thought about the relationship of being a son anymore, but he's okay with whatever he can get. And he goes back, and of course the father, I mean, there's an old movie quote where it's "You had me at hello," and this guy's trying to win back this girl, and he says all these things, and she says, "You had me at hello," and that's what this reminded me of, because the second he gets there and says and just starts talking to his father, the father's forgiven him. He's ready to take him back and be in a relationship with him again, and that's just. So that was the first son, and he pretty much just got rid of his relationship. He forgot that the relationship with God, or the father in this case, was the most important thing. He saw his father as a means to an end. He saw his father as a bank, if you will, something to get money out of, and didn't really think about what being in a relationship with his father was. And he's the one that leaves. He leaves and he comes back, but then he repents and he comes back. Then you have the older son, who would be a different kind of prodigal. He's the kind of prodigal where He stays. He's the prodigal that stays. He doesn't really want to be there. I think if he could choose any other place in the world to be, he would do that, but he feels like he's obligated to stay with his father. He's obligated to be there. He talks about when the older son or younger son comes back and he's talking to his father. He says, "I've been slaving in these fields for you every day for years, and what have I gotten out of it?" Which to me says he doesn't value the work that he does for his father. He doesn't do that out of love or out of the relationship with his father. It's all out of obligation, and I feel like that would be something that a lot of us can identify with. Of we do things, and sometimes there's things that we do in the Christian life that aren't all that exciting and aren't all that fun, but they're part of being a Christian, and they're part of following Christ and being in a relationship with Him. But when you take the difference in doing it out of love or out of obligation, it's just a huge difference in those two areas. So he is sitting there, and he is the older prodigal, and he has decided that he's better than he should be. He is the one that shouldn't be there. And I also think it's kind of funny, because how long was he slaving before he started to hate it? Was this when he was a little boy and he was working on the farm? I'm not sure how many of you guys grew up on a farm. I did not myself. My parents did, but there were things they did. I've heard many stories about getting up and milking the cows and, you know, riding in the tractors and doing all these things. And there was this element of doing stuff, doing tasks that would help out the farm, and it was just what they did. And the difference in doing that between as a hired hand or as a son of the person is a whole different story. And so how long had he been feeling this? Was this all the way through his life, or was this really driven home when his younger brother left? And he said, you know, obviously this guy can leave, but he didn't want to leave. He didn't think he could leave. He had to stay there, but the relationship got so damaged that he might as well have been gone, because he was no longer a son of his father's in his own mind, because he had moved from sonship to slaveship, and he was just this person that was there to do work, and it wasn't out of love for his father, it wasn't out of love for the family, it wasn't out of love for anything. It was all out of just fear and obligation that he needed to do this. And you would say a slave works out of obligation. A son works out of the love in his heart. And so I just encourage all of us to look at that as we're thinking about what we're doing with ourselves this year. And we look at this parable and we think about these two sons and we think about who they are, because I mean, I don't know about you, but whenever I try to take this and move it to today, because I mean, Jesus put out the parable so that the people there could understand him, and so he put out a parable that they would get. Well, obviously, I don't live in that culture, so I try to move it to today. So I think about who the younger son is. And the younger son, I think they're easy to find. The younger son is the person that goes out, parties all night, and does their thing. They're ones that sleep around. They're the ones that are being bad, quote unquote. They're the people that they waste their energy and they can't hold down a job because they're not responsible enough to do their thing, and they're living their own life and not really caring about anybody else. And that's who we always look at the younger son. And then we look at the older son, and it's a little harder to find who the older son is in our culture. But I would say it tends to be the people that don't have the grace for the younger son. It's the people that sit inside the walls of the church or of their home, wherever they might be, and just judge. They judge and judge and judge. And they find reasons why the other people are bad and why they're wrong. It's the people that they're like, oh, well, I don't want to give any money to a person that's homeless because they'll probably just spend it on alcohol. And why should I So they're not worthy of my help. They don't deserve the grace that God's given me. But those ones, I think, there's those people. But like I said, there's other people that they've replaced their relationship with God with an obligation to God, and just this joyless religion of doing this and this and this and this and not doing this and this and this and this because that's all you do. And there's not a sense of God came and died for me and he has given me this incredible gift of salvation and I love him dearly and so I want to do this and this and this. And all those things that you were doing out of obligation suddenly become a whole lot easier. And it's just so much easier when you live life in that way. You look at the older son, and there's one part where he talks about how, you know, I've been here and I've been slaving away and I've never broken any of your rules or your commands, I think how it goes in the ESV. And how true does that feel to today? When you talk to people about Christianity, the first thing you have to get back or get past generally is that it's a relationship and not a set of rules. It's not... This is sounding like a broken record to myself, but you can't just boil Christianity down to all these rules. And I think this older brother was doing that. He was just boiling it down, and we needed to get past that. And when you were talking to other people about Christ, that's the first thing they needed to get past, is that this is not just rules. There are guidelines, but it's so much more than that. The other thing I thought was interesting, because I talk about how he lost his relationship with his father, and he gets mad about this fattened calf that's being killed, which, to be honest, it's a pretty big deal. That was something they kept there, and it was for the biggest celebration you could find. And he says, I can't even have a young goat to celebrate with my friends, which there's two problems with this. One, you have the fact that if you'll remember at the beginning, it says that the father divided the property among them. And so that would mean that technically the father would have owned all of his stuff in a life estate. That's a little bit of legal jargon, but the younger son had his property. He was the owner of his side, and they both had their sides. And so this older son didn't even see the property that was his as his own. He wasn't embracing his rights as the heir to his father. He was just, he felt like his dad still had everything. He didn't collected what the father had actually given him. And so many times we do that. We live in this feeling that God can, you know, it's not ours. Our salvation isn't ours. It's still all God's. We have, God has all these possessions, all these things and all these whatever, and it's not ours, but we are his children, and he wants to give us the good gifts that he has for us, and we need to embrace that. The other part that I thought was interesting is that he wants to go celebrate with his friends. He doesn't really care to be around his dad, and he wants to be with his friends. He wants to celebrate with his friends. Get the goat, go off, and dad, you can stay over there, and we'll be over here celebrating. I mean, sure, this other one is, everyone's invited, but for me, I'd like to just be over here. And how many times do we partition ourselves off from God and say, you know, God, I don't really want you to be part of this. I'd like to just have my relationship with my friends over here and do my thing over here, and you can be over there, and you're great over there, and thanks for letting me have this goat, but I'll be over here with my friends. And forget about having that relationship, and the relationship with his father. He just kind of, he ignores it and moves past it and says, I don't feel that it's necessary. You talk about how when the younger son comes back and he says, that son of yours, he doesn't even want to claim the family enough to be able to be together in that way. It's just, it's pretty sad. The more you look at this passage, the more you start to feel for the older son and feel bad for him, quite honestly, that he is just so lost and hurting and broken, but he doesn't even know it. The younger son, at least, had that moment where he's sitting there with the pigs thinking, this is awful. And he's thinking, I need to go back to my father because the worst relationship I can have with him, being a servant in his house, is better than what I'm having right now. This older son, he hasn't figured that out yet. He's sitting there thinking, this is good, this is annoying, but it's the best I can possibly get. And he doesn't understand that there's so much more out there for him. And you think about the very end of the passage, the younger son comes home and the father runs out to meet him, and he does all the things of bringing him back into the relationship. He gives him the robe and the shoes and the ring and all these things, and has the big celebration and has the party, and he's back nothing aside from grace brought the younger son back. The fact that he accepted that grace and accepted that gift that his father's willing to give him is about all he did. He came back. But it wasn't because he deserved it, which is very similar to us. But the older son, and so then they go into this party, and they're having the feast, and I'm sure it was quite the gathering. The older son won't even come in because to do so would go back into a relationship with his father and his brother, and he's just so put off by this whole thing that he stays outside. And I mean, this is one of those parables that if you look at it, the very end of it, I mean, the younger son is the equivalent of saved, the older son not so much. And so he's really the sad picture in this parable. And I have to wonder why the older son was so upset at the younger son coming back. I mean, had he already, you know, disowned him for a long time, and so he didn't want him around, didn't really like him? Or was this purely financial? Was he worried that the son was going to take more of his inheritance somehow and finagle out his dad? I don't know. But I think about us when we're looking for people to come back to Christ. And do we always embrace them with open arms? Do we always say, yes, come back and come with us? Or do we say, you really messed up. You have to stay out there and do your, you know, your penance and do your stuff to, you know, make yourself worthy of getting part of us. We're the church. We're the Christians. We're the good people. You are out there. You need to clean yourself off some more before you can come back to us. Or, I mean, it doesn't really even work because God, if you try to take this analogy over to us, you have back then, the father in theory had finite resources. And so the son could have gotten, could have lost on more inheritance in theory. Whereas with God, we have a God of infinite grace, that it's not like we're sitting here thinking, well, if we let that guy get saved, three of us have to leave. And we can't be saved because God only has X amount of grace for lost people, and so we won't be able to be Christians. And so it doesn't make sense why we sometimes don't let people. We're called to make disciples, not make super clean people. And so I think that's important to think about when we're seeing the lost people that are around us. There's people that need God's love, and the way that they get shown that initially is through how we treat them. And so if we can't treat them in the eyes that the Father would have for them, then we are doing a huge disservice to God and to those people. And so I want to invite us to be just more open and loving. I think about what this means as we go into the year. As I mentioned, this is a new year. Tomorrow is 2018. It's a year where we get to start different things, and it's a fresh slate. And I want to look at our. I think what God's telling me is we need to look at our attitude. When I was growing up, my dad had his own company. It was a little communications company, and there was an understanding that we all did our part to make it work. and to make it run. I was a very small boy for some of this, so it's not like I was being a salesman or doing anything super important, but I was part of it. And I was thinking about the difference for that with myself and of the employees. There were guys that worked for my dad that they were there, and he had some wonderful employees, but at the same time they were there because they were getting paychecks. I was there because it was my dad's company and I was going to help out however it was. If it was sitting there and painting the shop floor so that it would not, I mean, just little stupid jobs all the time where you just go in there and you do your thing and you do your little part and just the differences. I mean, you think about the guys that would come in and you know, they'd come in on the weekend to do something. And they were good sports, but they didn't really want to be there. I mean, who wants to go to work on a weekend when they don't really have to? Well, a son is okay with that. A son understands that this is for the family. This is for to make the whole thing work better. And I think about that, and some of you, like I mentioned, some of you, who all grew up on a farm? I have to know this just because it's, wow, there's not as many as I would have thought. I both my parents were farming kids, and so I've seen that. But you have just this understanding that we all come together to do our part. And the church is the same way. And I think that we need to do our part, understanding that we are doing it as children of God and not as out of obligation. I invite you to look at how you're involved at this point. And there's some of you that are sitting there thinking, you know what, I can do something. I can help out. I can embrace this role and be a child of God and help out with God's business. And there's other of you that you might be tired. You might have been doing something and you're like, man, I'm doing this because it needs to be done. Don't really want to do it, but I want to help out. And if I don't do this, no one's going to do it. And it's turned into a sense of obligation for you. And I want you to search your heart real quick and just make sure that you're serving the church for the right reasons. Make sure that you're doing what you're doing because you love God so much. I was looking at some inspirational quotes, as people do sometimes. And one of the ones I came across was that volunteers don't serve because they have an abundance of time. Volunteers serve because they have an abundance of love. And I just thought that was so true because there's so many people in here that are doing so many things. And it's not that you guys are sitting here thinking, oh, I have to fill up 60 hours worth of volunteering because I have so much extra time on my hands. But it's because you have a love of God and you have a love of what he's doing in this church. And so I thank you for that. I thank you for being a part of this ministry. But I just want to invite each and every one of us to look at what we're doing and say, is this out of love or this is out of obligation? Because if it's out of love, it'll be fulfilling, it'll be fantastic, and you will have a fantastic year. If it's out of obligation, you'll be tired very shortly, and you won't want to do it, and the fire will go out. And I just don't want to have that for any of you. I want everyone in here to be serving in the capacity that does the most good for them as well as the most good for the church. And so as we go into this year, I invite you to spend this week thinking about that. And if you're one of the many volunteers that serves with me, let's talk. So